The best free agent pitcher this offseason signed with the Diamondbacks? Let's talk about it. Yes, welcome into another episode of First Pitch, your daily baseball recap with news, updates, and opinions on all things Major League Baseball. My name is Troy Brock. I am going to be your host today. You can find me on Twitter at Troy B Baseball. He is Lindsey Crosby coming to us from a garage. You can find him on Twitter at Crosby Baseball. And it's been a busy few days in the baseball landscape, Lindsey. They did not wait long after Santa Claus finished dropping off presents for the baseball gods to give us some presents of their own, did they?
Yeah, they didn't care about the fact that I'm stuck here in my sister's garage in Ohio trying to do a podcast. They're like, nope, we're going to give you plenty to talk about. And the big one, I think, is obviously Corbin Burnes finally deciding where he's going.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I've heard of men being stuck in the doghouse with their wives, but then you got Lindsey being stuck in the garage from his sister. So, you know, you can take that for what it's worth. But yes, absolutely. Corbin Burnes did sign a 6-year, $210 million contract with the Arizona Diamondbacks. And I'm not sure how many of y'all had Corbin Burnes through the Diamondbacks on your 2024 bingo card, but I can for sure say that we were not one of them. We even talked about it on Friday's episode of the show that we did not think he'd be going there, but he can opt out after 2 years. But I mean, Lindsey, what do you make of this signing, Corbin Burnes to the Diamondbacks?
When I found out that he lives in Scottsdale in the off season and that he's got three young children, it made a lot more sense for me. Like, okay, he doesn't have to move; he lives nearby, but it's still really good money, despite that. And I was hesitant to just assume really anywhere that he would go, because all we knew is that Baltimore didn't feel like they were going to do it. I do feel like this is a missed opportunity for Baltimore to feel like now that rotation is not postseason worthy. Really. You added a fourth starter out of Japan, but like, that's all you really did. And for the Diamondbacks, this gives you a guy knowing that you could lose both. I think it's both Zach Gallen and Merrill Kelly after this year. There's a couple of these top pitchers for them are potential free agents. This gives you a guy that has been very good the last few seasons. He has posted just about every year. He doesn't miss starts. He goes deep into games. And at the end of the year last year, when he pulled that sweeper out and started using that sweeper, he was just phenomenal down the stretch with that new sweeper that you can absolutely see him kind of focusing on and making a weapon there in Arizona. So great deal for them. I'm assuming Jordan Montgomery's on his way out soon.
Yeah, that's been the going belief across the social media landscape, is that now that they've added Corbin Burnes, Jordan Montgomery is on his way out. However, I did see a report today from MLB Trade Rumors that the Arizona Diamondbacks themselves have said they are not close to trading any of their pitchers. So we'll have to wait and see if that will be, in fact, the case. But Jordan Montgomery has not worked out for them so far, and he only made 21 starts in 2024, of course, starting the season late after signing late last offseason. But yeah, their rotation right now is Corbin Burnes in the one spot, Zach Gallen as the two pitcher, one of the best two pitchers in baseball.
Oh my gosh. That might be one of the best 1-2 punches in all of baseball right there.
Yeah, it's definitely up there for sure. Merrill Kelly, 3, Eduardo Rodriguez, 4, Brandon Pfaadt, 5, and then Fangraphs does have them with a 6-man rotation and Jordan Montgomery in the 6th spot. But as far as their offense goes, Lindsey, their pitching seems to be pretty on point, especially including their bullpen. Do you think that their offense is enough to keep up with the rest of the National League West?
Well, you're in a situation, you lost Jock Peterson. You swapped out Christian Walker for Josh Bell. Obviously, I think this is the final year of control for Josh Bell as well. So it's not like you're going to have him, or was it? But yeah. Point is, you're in a situation here where you lost two big power hitters and you didn't add as much. Now, Jordan Lawler could come up. He could be a dynamic piece, but it definitely feels like you need better production from the existing rest of the roster. And you're hoping that a little bit better pitching, or a lot better pitching, because you had injuries last year too with this entire rotation. Gallen missed time, Kelly missed time. Some better pitching, and hopefully only a small step back on offense can get you back into postseason contention versus being eliminated on the last day like they were by the Atlanta Mets doubleheader there. I do wonder about the infield defense, however, because Christian Walker was so good. And we think about defense at first base as fielding your position, but scoops on throws and picks and things like that is a big part of it. And if you can't get really good defensive play at first base, it could lower the ceiling of some of these pitchers if they're giving up unearned runs on throwing errors and things like that.
Absolutely. To clean up a little bit here, first base, their new first baseman is Josh Naylor.
Naylor, not Bell. Yes. They traded for Josh Bell last year. That's right. Correct. Sorry. Thank you.
And Josh Naylor is most definitely an offense first baseman. And then Merrill Kelly last year made only 13 starts, 73 innings. And then Zach Gallen made only 28 starts, 148 innings. Their only pitcher that qualified for the ERA title last year was Brandon Pfaadt, who threw 101 innings with a 4.71 ERA. But yeah, to your point, exactly. The scoops are a big deal, and they still have Eugenio Suarez at third base, Josh Naylor at first, Ketel Marte at second, and Geraldo Perdomo at shortstop. So the infield defense, especially with Corbin Burnes being more of a ground ball pitcher, their infield defense is definitely going to need to step it up if they want to keep Corbin Burnes being as good as he's been over the last few years, especially with the decrease in the strikeouts over the last few years.
Yeah, and correct me if I'm wrong, I think both Suarez and Naylor will be free agents after this year as well. So you're into a potential another offseason of losing some offensive pieces, you know, in Suarez and Naylor, depending on how they do this year. I mean, obviously you can re-sign guys, but you could lose even more after this season as well. So you're in a situation where you might have two straight off seasons where you have significant subtractions from your offense. And at some point in time, they're going to have to go out and sign a hitter. I mean, maybe they give up a draft pick to do an Anthony Santander this offseason. Their free agent spots, their outfield spots are very full already. You know, you could always DH him or something like that. But at some point in time, they're going to have to sign some sort of power hitter if you also turn around next offseason and lose both Naylor and Suarez as well.
Yes, Naylor and Suarez will both be free agents next offseason. And last thing on Corbin Burnes before we move on here, do you like the contract that he signed? 6 years, $210 million when Max Fried got 8 years, $218 million. So what do you think the difference is there?
I think the biggest surprise to me is that Fried got more money than both Snell or Burnes, and none of Fried's money's deferred either. I think both Burnes and Snell have deferrals in there as well. And
yes.
I like the idea. I think the worst case scenario here for the Diamondbacks is you have a bunch of your existing guys walk after this year. Pitching staff, we mentioned Gallen, Kelly, guys like that. And then also you have Burnes opt out after two seasons. Now, that being said, typically, as you get longer into those free agent deals into the 30s, the guys start to underperform the annual value. So maybe it would be a good thing. But you can see how this Diamondbacks team is really kind of at an inflection point because they gave this opt-out to Burnes, where they could lose significant star power guys in the on the pitching staff, as well as losing more offensive players in the next couple off seasons and be in a bad place in a few years if the farm system and the free agency work doesn't come through. So I like the deal for Burnes in a vacuum. Him having an opt-out, he can capitalize on that new sweeper, and if he can get a strikeout rate back up, show teams that he's healthy. But I think the hope here is that he sticks around and plays out the contract for Arizona, if nothing else, just to give them some stability.
Right, absolutely. And to clean up on this contract, it is $60 million deferred on Burnes' deal, opt-out after 2026. He has a full no-trade clause for 2025 and 2026. After, if he does not exercise his opt-out and he's still under contract from 2027 to 2030, it's only a 14-team no-trade clause. And then it is the largest contract in Arizona Diamondbacks history at time of signing.
Beating Zach Greinke's deal. Which was also out of nowhere, if I remember right.
Yeah. So Corbin Burnes is definitely getting paid. Everybody expected him to get paid. Just again, not sure how many people expected it to be the Arizona Diamondbacks to be the ones that paid him. But there is another player that's getting paid by a team in the National League West, and that is outfielder Teoscar Hernandez. He finally found his landing spot. I think both of us said on Friday's episode we didn't think he was going back to Los Angeles, and it was a few hours after the episode dropped that he, in fact, signed with the Los Angeles Dodgers. 3 years, $66 million deal. What do you make of this, Lindsay? Teoscar Hernandez to the Dodgers.
I mean, he placed a bet on himself last offseason. He took that one-year deal. It was more annual money than people expected him to get, but he wanted the longevity of the long-term deal. It absolutely worked out. He had one of his better offensive seasons last year, obviously wins a World Series, and now turns around and gets a long-term pack for a couple more years. Probably the last major multi-year deal he's going to get in his career. He's 32 right now, so he'll be 35 as a free agent, turning into his 36th year. But this comes out to a four-year, 89.5 million dollar deal when you factor in last year's deal. If Teoscar got that last year, we just said that's a great deal. That's a great deal for Teoscar. You get to go back to a stacked team, and the Dodgers just kind of continue to get better. They're the only real team that's flexing the financial muscles that they have outside of Steve Cohen and his signing of Juan Soto. So I like this for Teoscar. He doesn't have to carry the weight on that team. I like this for the Dodgers. They already know he fits into the offense. He fits into the clubhouse. The one thing I do worry about is for in 2 or 3 years, what is his defense going to look like? Because you don't really have the ability to put him at DH in LA because of Shohei Ohtani. Now, is it possible that maybe he learns first base or something and tries to fill in for a year when Freddie's gone? I don't know. But that's the only real concern I have about the multi-year deal for Teoscar is what does that defense look when he's 35? And is he a liability out there that you just have to live with because Shohei's your DH? But other than that, it's a great deal for both Teoscar and the Dodgers.
Yeah, absolutely. And we talked about it before we jumped on here to record this episode. I had no clue he was 32 years old. So it's crazy how long he's been in the league. It's just completely slipped my mind. But it is a 3-year deal, $66 million. There is a club option for 2028 that could make it a 4-year deal and add another $15 million onto it. And as of right now, there is $23 million deferred on his deal. Just another in the long lines of deferrals that the Dodgers have done over the past few years.
Wasn't there a signing bonus as well that was near the amount of the deferral? Because I think that's the strategy that they're doing with a lot of these guys, is the signing bonus can come and they're not having to pay the state taxes on it because they're not living in the state at the time they sign the deal, and then close to that same amount is deferred later in the deal, so the money all works out for the Dodgers in the end.
It is a $23 million signing bonus. So essentially exactly how much is deferred right now just depends on that club option in 2028. But with all the moves that they've made so far this offseason, they being the Dodgers with signing Blake Snell, bringing Teoscar Hernandez back, do you think they're done? Is there another move that's out there for them to make, or is this it?
I mean, maybe they grab a reliever. You know, their bullpen is so fungible as far as guys coming in and out. They did re-sign Blake Treinen. You know, maybe they wait and they pounce on one of these relievers at a low cost as you get close to free agency and guys start looking for homes at anything they can get. I feel like that's what they did with Teoscar last year. They waited a little bit longer, got him on a one-year deal, and it paid off for him. So maybe something like that. But for the most part, they're probably done this offseason. I mean, what? There's no real holes on this team, right? I mean, second base with Gavin Lux isn't great, but like, I think that if that's the biggest complaint you really can have, it's really not that big of a deal. Unless they do something like go ahead and waive or get rid of Chris Taylor and try to use that roster spot, I feel like they're probably done this offseason, barring a small move in the bullpen here or there.
Yeah. FanGraphs right now has their lineup 1 through 9, Shohei Ohtani DHing, Mookie Betts at shortstop, Freddie Freeman at first, Teoscar Hernandez batting cleanup in right field, Max Muncy playing third, Will Smith doing the catching, Michael Conforto in left, Tommy Edman in center, Gavin Lux batting ninth in second, and then their bench being Austin Barnes as the backup catcher, Miguel Rojas as a backup infielder, Chris Taylor as a utility man, and James Outman as their final outfielder.
Yeah. Yep. Golly, that's the best roster in baseball. I mean, I hate to say it, but that's the best roster in baseball. And it's kind of hard to not to say the Dodgers are going to be the favorites for the World Series next year, because they'll have Shohei back in the rotation with Blake Snell, Yamamoto, Tyler Glasnow. That's probably the best 1-4 if they're healthy in all of baseball. And then they've got a bunch of guys behind them that can kind of take some innings. It's absurd.
Yeah, the other two guys right now listed behind those four are Tony Gonsolin and Dustin May. So it's they're
and
just
Clayton
they're...
Kershaw's gonna re-sign in like late February or something, and he'll come back some point in time during the season too. They'll add a Hall of Famer halfway through the year.
Yeah, he's one of the guys that's gonna spend his entire career with one team. Like I thought Freddie Freeman should have, but that's another story for a different day. The Tigers made a splash in free agency this week also while we were off for the weekend, and they signed Gleyber Torres to a 1-year $15 million contract. Good old Gleyber Torres. We talked about him on Friday's episode of the show also. And yeah, it was surprising. Exactly. Why?
Why are you giving Gleyber Torres $15 million and moving Colt Keith from second to first to accommodate it? Now, I know Spencer Torkelson, like, you did not want Spencer Torkelson in the lineup. I get it. It's fine. Whatever. His role is to be determined. I think hint shed, which means he's going to be in Toledo. But why are you moving Colt Keith from second to first for a year to make room for Gleyber Torres? I know you'll have Jace Young at third base. He looked rough in his debut last year. He had dealt with an injury at some point in time last year. It's also a small sample size. He'll be fine. But if it's me, I would have rather brought in somebody like Alex Bregman. We've seen that rumor back and forth at third. You could still put Young at first, and you could put Colt Keith at first, and you could put Young at second. But Gleyber Torres, $15 million, it feels like you were kind of competing with yourself for Gleyber Torres. I don't think you had to pay him $15 million. I know he was good, roughly offensively for the Yankees last year. What are we doing, man? Why are we giving Gleyber Torres $15 million on a 1-year deal and making some of your young talent like Colt Keith change positions to accommodate him? I will say, though, Cubs fans have to be thrilled to finally see the Javi Baez, Gleyber Torres middle infield double play combo they were wanting 8 years ago. They finally get those guys together.
Now, that remains to be seen if they will be starting. At some point, they will be turning at least one double play will be turned by those two guys in 2025.
Probably spring training, but yeah, at some point in time, those guys will turn a double play together. Cubs fans will be happy.
FanGraphs does have Spencer Torkelson starting 2025 in AAA. I don't think
Toledo Mudhens, baby.
Yeah, I don't think he's going to be a member of the Detroit Tigers organization by the time spring training gets here. I think he's going to be moved because they've tried him. He hasn't worked for them, and I think that a change of scenery will do him good. Just because
he's the ultimate change of scenery guy, and he's probably the most appealing buy low you could find out there. A former number one overall pick that didn't work with the Tigers. There's probably half a dozen teams that would be willing to take him on for almost nothing to see if they can fix it and get a slugging first baseman who's not horrible defensively, right?
Right, absolutely. And he had a 30-plus home run season just in 2023. He hit 31 home runs in 2023 and had a 758 OPS, 107 OPS plus in that year. So it's not like
life comes at you fast, doesn't it?
It's not like the talent's not there. It's just it hasn't worked for him in Detroit. And as far as Gleyber Torres goes, offensively last year, he did have a 708 OPS with 15 home runs and 665 plate appearances with the Yankees. He is an offense first second baseman because he has just been atrocious. As we talked about on Friday, he's been atrocious defensively at every position he's played. So it's, to me, this deal doesn't make sense either. And we both had Alex Bregman kind of going to the Detroit Tigers on Friday, and I still think that would have made a lot more sense. But really, neither of their signings this offseason have made sense. They signed Alex Cobb to a 1-year $15 million deal. And while that does add depth to their rotation, and it's not just Tarik Skubal, FanGraphs has him as their third starter, and he's making $15 million. And so are they going to be a postseason team in 2025, or are they going to miss out kind of like the 2015 Astros did when they made the postseason in 2015 and missed in 2016?
Probably going to have some sort of, or going to need some sort of great run like they had down the stretch last year, the Gritty Tigs, right? To me, you can do the heavy bullpen usage like they did for a month, 2 months. We saw it kind of fall apart in the postseason. The first time, one of those openers, and then the bullpen faltered a little bit in the postseason, it blew the whole pitching plan up, right? You can do that for a little bit. You can't do that for a full season. I honestly think that each team needs to have 8, 9, 10 guys identified as guys who can take starts for us like when the season starts. When you get to opening day, some of them will be in AAA, some of them will be prospects, but you need to have 9 or 10 dudes that you say, hey, this is how many starters we need, and this is our list. If a guy goes down, we need a spot start, a doubleheader, whatever. And I feel like the Tigers, there's a bunch of names in that second group, including some prestigious, highly drafted. Casey Mize was a 1-1, and he's in that group. But Alex Cobb is your number three, feels like it's a recipe for danger. And I feel like it's going to take some generational health and luck for this rotation to be able to keep them in it on the non-Tariq Skubal days so that they can reinforce at the deadline. I would love the Tigers to go out and get one more arm. I don't think they're going to bring Jack Flaherty back in. I think he wants a longer-term deal. But there's guys you can go out there and you can get, veterans that can go in and take innings. Bring Justin Verlander back for one last hurrah in Detroit. Bring in at least one other starter, a dude who could be a postseason starter for you if you need it. A lot of the premier free agents are signed, but Verlander, Scherzer, one of those veterans to come in for this young team, if they need to do something like that, if they want to be a playoff team in 2025.
I 100% agree. And I think that they should have made more upgrades to their offense this offseason than they did. Gleyber Torres isn't much of an upgrade. And yes, they have a lot of young guys that could make improvements going into 2025. But down the stretch, even with their miracle run that put them in the postseason, their team OPS was 0.002 lower than their team OPS in the first half of the season. So even though they were on that miracle run, their offense was worse than it was in the first half.
It was like one run games, and it was just the pitching plans working perfectly every single day. And that's not, we saw the 23 Marlins were a playoff team because they were exceptional in one run games. What happened last year? They regressed to the mean on that. And then some. They dealt with some pitching injuries, and they were one of the worst teams in the National League. And I feel like I'm not saying Detroit's going to be one of the worst teams in the National League. They have more talent than the Marlins, but I'm saying that they're kind of banking on everything that went right last year going right again. And I think the plan needs to be hope for the best and prepare for the worst. And it feels like they've hoped for the best and assumed that's going to work. And it just feels like you need to do more to keep them in it, especially in a division that, yes, put in 3 postseason teams last year, but I'm still not convinced is it winnable by 3 of those teams. Like, they could still win the division next year, which I don't think is something that we talk about enough. We just assume that it's going to go chalk like it did last year. Detroit can make some moves and win that division if they wanted to. And it just feels like they're kind of hedging their bets on, we're going to hope everything goes right again. And that's not a sustainable baseball practice.
Absolutely. 100% agree with you. And you did bring up the Marlins in your paragraph there. And they made a trade today with the Chicago Cubs. The Marlins did. They traded Mr. Vidal Brujan to the Cubs in return for first baseman Matt Mervis and cash considerations. So where are you on this trade, Lindsay?
We have finally freed Matt Mervis. Back when I had Lockbet MLB prospects, we talked about free Matt Mervis a ton. He had a generational run in Iowa 1 year in AAA for the Cubs. And he got like 140 at-bats in Chicago. It didn't work out. Michael Busch was traded for, took over first base. He wasn't going to get a chance in Chicago. I do think he's going to get tons of playtime in Miami. He's going to have an opportunity to show. They don't have a lot of options at first base. Nobody locked in. And Vidal Brujan is very talented defensively. He's versatile. He can play a lot of different positions. He has good speed. He doesn't steal bases very well, but he has good speed. he just offensively hasn't been able to put it together. You saw Peter Bendix came from Tampa Bay to Miami. One of the first moves he made was he acquired Bruján. Bruján played a ton last year. The bat still has not come around, so they're moving on. I like the Cubs having the versatility of a dude on the bench they can throw in the eighth or ninth inning if they need a defender or a pinch runner, even though he's not going to steal for you. But the upside there doesn't feel like there's much upside with Bruján. We have three seasons of at-bats to show that the offense is not there. Mervis never really got a fair shake in Chicago. He struggled early. They moved on from him. I legitimately think that the Marlins, on paper right now, won this simply from the perspective of they don't really have a first baseman. Matt Mervis can be that first baseman. He can still break out. The odds are that Bruján's going to break out are almost as low as the odds that Jerickson Profar was going to figure it out last year, and he happened to do it. So I kind of counteracted myself with that, but I still feel like the Cubs won, the Marlins won this one simply because they have the guy that can still break out. And we know what Vadil Bruján is. He's a useful 26th man on your roster, a defender. He's not good anywhere defensively, but you can throw him in six different positions if you need to. So I'll say that, but I do absolutely think that this is the Marlins have won this trade as much as you can win a trade for two fringe major leaguers in mid-December.
Right. To clean up a little bit here on Mervis and Bruján, both guys will be entering their age 27 season in 2025. Mervis has only had 127 major league plate appearances.
Yeah, I said 140. Okay.
Yeah. Plus. In those plate appearances, he has a 155 batting average. And then Bruján has had 550 plate appearances across four seasons, three with the Rays, one with the Marlins, and he has a 189 batting average in that time. So
he has like one full season of plate appearances across 4 years. Mervis has, you know,
a quarter of a season.
Yeah, barely a quarter of a season over 1 year, and it wasn't even last year. It was 23. So, yeah, there you go. Okay, fair enough. We're close. Yeah. I was close on that.
Yeah, for sure.
I'm doing this with no notes in a garage in Ohio. Like, we're good.
Yeah, no, for sure. And finally, we got to talk about Pete Alonso, because Pete Alonso reportedly turned down a three-year, $90 million offer from the New York Mets over the past week. Now, let's back up to 2023. The New York Mets offered Pete Alonso a seven-year, $158 million contract extension that he also turned down to try and pull a Juan Soto and bet on himself. And so far, that has not worked. He turned down the three-year, $90 million offer and reportedly is looking for an offer in the $175 to $200 million range. Lindsay, before I say something stupid, you go right ahead, sir.
Okay. 158 over seven is like $22.5 million a year. You want 175. So the difference in that obviously is $17 million, but he wins some home run derbies. Okay. You get $1 million every time you win one, win some home run derbies, put some incentives in there and move on. Turning down the extension in retrospect was a mistake. I understand at the time with his offensive performance, his home run so that he had hit to that point. I understand thinking, I should be able to get more than that on the open market. I've said on here before, the physical profile of that slugging first baseman who's not good defensively and just hits for power is a scary one for major league teams. And a lot of teams have gotten smarter at not giving those guys those stupid long contracts. The few exceptions we've seen at first base, Freddie Freeman, who has aged incredibly well, and we all knew he would. He's not a massive slugger type. Bryce Harper was signed as an outfielder, not as a first baseman. You know, a lot of those first base contracts just feel like they don't age well. I'm thinking about how much money the Astros will be paying Abreu to not even play for them in 2025. It's like the last year of the deal he would have had. He was so bad. And so I think Pete, in the long run, messed this up. I think Pete probably, in retrospect, should have taken the extension or should have tried to, at that time, get it a little closer to the money that he wanted. This new front office with David Stearns obviously doesn't want to go very far on an extension for Pete or on a contract for Pete. I don't see anybody out there. The Giants are reportedly in on Pete for some reason. We talked about that last week. I honestly don't see Pete getting anything longer than three or maybe 4 years if there's some team that feels like they have to come in better than the Mets to get him away from the Mets. Maybe somebody offers him a fourth year. But at this point, I think 3 years, when was it, 93 years and 90?
Yeah.
Probably the best offer he's going to get, $30 million a year. If you somehow defy the aging curves and still are playing really well in your mid-30s, it'll be like Christian Walker. Somebody else will give you another deal to keep playing. Carlos Santana showed good defense, and he got a deal at age 39. Like, if you show that you're healthy enough and you're skilled enough and your age has not taken a hit, you'll get another deal. But I just don't feel like Pete's going to get that. And three and 90, it's probably the best he was going to get. And I feel like he's going to end up having to settle for even less than that this offseason, this winter.
Yeah. So I'm gonna throw out three figures here, and I want you to see the common correlation between these three figures. Seven years, $161 million. So 7 years, $161 million. Okay. 5 years, $125 million. 3 years, $58.5 million. So do you know the correlation between those three contracts that were signed in the past?
They're all non-Pete Alonso first baseman. No. Yes. They're all non-Pete Alonso first baseman. I'm trying to think of who they are, though. Once Freddie Freeman, I think.
No.
No, not Freddie Freeman? Okay. Yeah, what? Who are they?
I will pull up Freddie Freeman's also. So 7 years, $161 million is the contract that Chris Davis signed with the Baltimore Orioles.
Oh, I blocked that out.
In 2016. 5 years, $125 million is the contract that Ryan Howard signed with the Philadelphia Phillies in 2012.
$25 million. Yeah, okay.
And 3 years, $58.5 million is the contract that Jose Abreu signed with the Houston Astros ahead of 2023.
Those are all the warning sign contracts on why you don't want to give Pete a ton of money and they don't want to go longer than 3 years. Like, baseball, for the most part, has learned this specific lesson. We're still seeing dudes get contracts that are way too long, right? Trey Turner is going to be a Philly till he's 41. It's absurd. But they've learned the lesson on this situation. The big, lumbering, bad defensive first baseman. Don't give him a contract until he's 40. Don't be attached to him any later than 35, and even earlier if you can help. Pete has not learned that lesson yet.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, he will only be 30 in 2025. Granted, he is a one-trick pony, and his only trick being hitting home runs. He is not good defensively. He is not good at with batting average. He hits base home runs, running, and that's
yeah.
it. Yeah. And Ryan Howard was 32, and Freddie Freeman's contract, by the way, 6 years, 162 with the Dodgers.
As a Braves fan, I should have known that. A bunch of that was deferred too, and I think the annual value came out the same as Atlanta's, or maybe you factor in taxes or something. So, as the offer that Atlanta gave reportedly gave him, and he went to LA anyway. But yeah, it's Pete's going to be the guy left out this winter. Sucks for Pete, but at this point, we've said it now on five different shows, like, you should have taken the 3 for $90, man. That you should have done that. That was your bad. $30 million a year for 3 years is not a bad way to live. And if you were still up to it, you'd have gotten another deal after that. But just nobody wants to pay you now, guarantee those years now, because they don't know how you'll age.
Yep, absolutely. Jose Abreu was 36 going into his age 36 season when he signed his deal. Chris Davis, same as Pete Alonso, was going into his age 30 season when he signed his deal and fell off the face of the earth. So yes. It's not good. But this has been First Pitch for Monday, December 30th. If you're listening on audio, leave a follow. Leave us that 5-star rating. It helps us out tremendously. If you're watching on YouTube, leave a like, leave a comment, hit that subscribe button, and give us some words of affirmation down below. We sure enjoy those. And as always, I've been Troy, your host. He has been Lindsay. And this has been First Pitch.